Well, hello everybody again, wherever you may be in the world today. I mean, I keep saying this, but I only bring the best speakers to the Remote Work Life Summit. And I feel so blessed in that sense that today I have with me today, Derek Anderson of Startup Grind. He's the founder and CEO of Startup Grind. And the reason I feel blessed is because Derek has been, himself. I've had successful entrepreneurs and leaders on before, and Derek is another example of that. In fact, Derek right now, he's running two companies, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a little while, but Startup Grind was my first interaction with Derek. And I think the reason I wanted to bring him on, as I said, you're going to get a lot of inspiration. You're going to get the practical tips as well. As well as that, obviously, startup, with this being a remote summit, we're going to talk about the remote aspects of Derek's company. Derek, as I said, Startup Grind, it's a global startup community which is designed to educate, inspire, and connect entrepreneurs throughout the world. So, Derek, I just want to say a massive thank you to you for joining us today. I know you're really busy. Just thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a very thoughtful introduction.
Not at all. It's I could have thought a lot more to say, but I want to leave. I don't want to talk too much today. I want to leave the platform to you because I know that people listening are going to get so much from this today. And I'm quite good at talking, but as I said, I'm going to leave the stage to you today, Derek. Derek, first of all, I just wanted you just to tell us a bit more about Startup Grind and how that got started.
Startup Grind is designed to educate every entrepreneur in the world, and we do that through local chapters that we have set up in over 500 cities in about 120 countries, and we host monthly events in those cities. We do about 200 events a month, so in roughly about half those cities are hosting monthly events or an event on any given month. And then occasionally throughout the year, we'll host sort of larger gatherings where the whole community comes together. In February, we'll be in Silicon Valley. We have about an 8,000 person event there that we do. We've done for 6 years. And so we'll host about 100,000 entrepreneurs in person this year, or as we like to say, in real life. And then we have tens of millions that will be educated through our content online this year. It started as literally just an event for me and my friends to get together to educate each other. It was not designed to really be anything beyond that. We called it Startup Grind because that was sort of what resonated with me as an entrepreneur, of the struggle and the work and the effort that I was putting in. A lot of people who aren't entrepreneurs, they think Startup Grind is sort of this negative sort of name, but actually, entrepreneurs, I think, really resonate with it because, it's really about self-improvement. It's about, building and creating and, grinding. There's no glory in struggling or making mistakes again and again and again, but learning and growing and improving, that's what Startup Grind is all about. And so our values are to help first, to give before you take, and to make friends. And a lot of people resonate with those values around the world, either aspirationally or they live those values already. And so we've been really blessed to have hundreds and thousands of great people volunteer and sort of join our extended team as chapter directors to lead Startup Grind in their city or, to participate in some way or another. And so that's what Startup Grind is.
Yeah, and like I said, it's incredible because you started only a few years ago and you've grown to such a massive network, such a meaningful network of people. You mentioned the events and the content that you put out. It's such a valuable thing. And I think anybody listening to this, I mean, you may be thinking, why is it that I've got Derek on here who runs Startup Grind, which is aimed at entrepreneurs. I think that whole word, that word grind in itself, I think can be applied not just to entrepreneurs, it can be applied to people trying to, you know, really sort of do the best in their careers as well. So there's that aspect. The second aspect is that I think the events like Startup Grind puts out are quite probably undervalued when it comes to developing your career, and it can help you with your decisions, whether you choose to go that way or that way. It can help you to meet friends, as Derek was saying as well. And it's those values, I think, that really struck me in the, you know, helping others first, making friends and not contacts, and giving and not taking. And Derek, were those values sort of, how have those values helped you with Startup Grind?
Well, honestly, like the most important thing that we did was we put our values on the website, and that, you know, started really attracting a lot of amazing people who we sort of matched our ethos and what we were trying to be. Very early on, I attended the event, and he invited me to go to lunch with him, and he's a very successful investor. And he said, you know, do you understand? He's like, you know, I really enjoyed the event. It was very different. And I said, oh, thanks. And he's like, I was like, you know, it's just an event. He's like, no, you don't understand. It, like, the difference with Startup Grind and other programs is, and he, you know, he sort of described these things about, it's like, it's more about making friends, you know, it's not about LinkedIn connections. It's more about giving. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, that's true. He's like, but don't you understand? It's very unique. And I said, no, I didn't. And he said, you know, you need to like articulate that and put it on the website. And so I did. I went back that day and we put it on the website. And it really had a huge impact. And so, you know, sometimes I'm not the best embodiment of those values. And so they're sort of aspirational to me in some ways. In some ways, you know, maybe we are good at, you know, being some of those things. So it ebbs and flows, but that's sort of like, that's the bar that we set for ourselves. And hopefully people that, you know, have that, also have that bar, you know, they find us. And when they see that, they're like, oh man, these are my people, you know, this is the kind of people I want to be around. And they jump in and get involved.
And the events that you referred to, tell us a bit more about typical types of events. Cause I know, I'm sure there are people out there who may not have heard of Startup Grind. And what I would say actually is, before you answer that question, is that it's so difficult to find quality events, networks for entrepreneurs. And which is why I think it's so important that you listen to Derek, and that you, once you finish listening to the video, that you check out the Startup Grind website to see if there's a local chapter in your area, to see if there's an event, and then you start, you know, putting that into action. But Derek, back to my question. What are the typical events and content that you help entrepreneurs with?
Yeah, early on we tried lots of different things. And at some point I had a speaker who was gonna come, and he said, well, I'll come, but I can't prepare a talk, but I can just show up and you can interview me. And then I'll come right before, and then I'm gonna leave right after. I said, okay, yeah, great, we can do that. And so that worked really well. People enjoyed the interview. It wasn't a sales pitch. You know, there was a lot of learnings, and then it was good for me because then I got to be on stage with them. So then that like helped my brand and helped me sort of, you know, sort of meet more people. And so it was like a win-win-win. And after that, we're like, let's just do that. So we you know, 99% of what we do is a fireside chat between a speaker, sort of influential thought leader, and a chapter director. And then, you know, 1% of our events are these sort of larger, more, you know, regional-based events. We've got one today in Barcelona with 1,500 people. We've got one in a few weeks in Melbourne with, you know, a big group of people. So occasionally we do these sort of full-day or multi-day events. But generally speaking, it's a fireside chat evening event after work, where you can just come in, listen for an hour, network, meet people, help people, before and after, and then get on your way after a few hours.
And I mean, you mentioned the incredible network, the different countries that you're you know, that startup grind is in. For me, I mean, I have kids myself, and you know, there's lots of people, well, yeah, lots of listeners here that have kids as well. Any tips, any advice for balancing what is a very busy and very, you know, it's a business that's growing. In fact, you have two businesses. How do you balance family and work life?
Well, you know, I think one thing that is sort of misunderstood is that work-life balance does not mean like equal balance. Like, it doesn't mean perfectly symmetrical or, you know, 50% here, 50% there. You know, when you're especially when you're building a company or you're just working really hard, you're trying to sort of level up and move your circumstances from where they are to somewhere significantly ahead, and that requires a lot of effort and work to do that, or it, you know, everyone would do it. And so, you know, what I just try to do is just do the, like, put the important things in first. And there's this analogy that probably people have heard where you have a jar and you have these big balls and you have little balls and you got to put them all in the jar. And, you know, if you put the little balls in first, you can't get the big balls in. But if you put the big balls in first, the things that are really important, the things that you absolutely don't want to mess up or and then you put the little balls in next, then you can get everything in together. And so to me, the big balls include like having dinner with my family or taking my kids to school or making sure my wife, you know, isn't angry at me. You know, those are the big balls, and, you know, trying to be a good friend or, you know, contribute in my faith community or, you know, things that I, regardless of what happens with my startup, like, I don't want to mess up. And then, you know, and then I put in all the little startup balls around it. And okay, I spend a lot more time on my startup than I do hanging out with my kids. But I, you know, I just try not to let those things get to the point where they break or where they're close to breaking or, you know, where they kind of cross, start to get on that line where I can't come back. And, I mean, we'll see. I'm 9 years into being an entrepreneur. I got a long ways to go, but, I hope that I sort of keep that focus and can figure it out. There are a lot of people, a lot of good people are not able to figure this out. And so I'm not saying it from a place of like, I got to figure it out. I'm saying it from a place of I'm working hard every single day to try to figure it out. And I do things like I take red eyes after my kids go to bed, or I take crazy flights to get home so I can sleep in my own house as much as possible. I travel as little as possible. You know, so, you know, you just do things to try to keep some sense of balance in there. And, it's very difficult and it's an ongoing thing, that I wouldn't say I figured out, but I'm trying very hard to, you know, figure out what works for me. And those are some things that have worked for me to this point.
Well, like I said, as a father myself, I find you an inspiration. Derek, and I said that before we got online. And it's I love that analogy that you gave, and also the fact that you, I think a lot of people think that the work-life balance is like a perfect balance. But that perfect balance, like you said, it doesn't have to be 50-50. It can be, like you said, with me, I took my kids in, I take my children to school, keeping my other half happy, those sorts of things, you know, trying to be, you know, in fact, you're laying down your legacy. You're preparing the future, aren't you? In many ways, not just for yourself and your family, but for other people as well. You're helping other people in the world. So thank you for that, Derek. Thank you. In terms of, back to Startup Grind now. I want to talk a little bit more about Startup Grind. Because I, like I said to you before, I mean, it's really hard to find quality. The reason it's so difficult to find quality networking events is because there are so many. You can look online, you find so many people saying that they've got the next biggest thing, the greatest event coming up. I know that Startup Grind is the one of the best out there. How can something like Startup Grind, how can Startup Grind help with those people trying to sort of really push their career forward?
I mean, you're always one deal away from dramatically pushing things ahead. So, a couple of years ago, we signed up a partnership with Google for Entrepreneurs, now Google for Startups, which is a group inside of Google that helps entrepreneurs and startups. And, when we signed that deal, it was like we leveled up, and a lot of things changed. There are certain people that have joined the team over the years that, like, when they joined the team, it was like, boom, like, we just leveled up. And so, Startup Grind is a great way to sort of introduce serendipity into your life, into your professional life, whether it be through what you could learn at a Startup Grind in a talk or meeting a speaker, or could be somebody, meeting the person sitting next to you. You never know who it is. And so I think if great entrepreneurs are always learning and are always opening doors, it doesn't mean you like say yes to everything, but you're at least sort of listening to everything. And I think Startup Grind just puts you in a position where you can get a lot of feedback, you can meet a lot of interesting people, and potentially do something great. And there's lots of great examples of that over the years. I won't bore you with them right now, but it's just say you have to trust me. If you come, I went to a Startup Grind last night in Sacramento, California, and I met a bunch of interesting people that I would have never ever met in my entire life. There's no way I would have ever come across them. And I think I helped one or two people too, and they made the effort to get there. There's somebody looking for a job. They may end up working for us. There's an entrepreneur who's really struggling with his startup. We spent 20 minutes together talking about what he can do to improve and to fix the problems that he has. You just don't know unless you get out of your chair and get out of the building and put yourself out there and try to get better.
And is there a typical type of person that attends? By that, I mean, do you tend to get people who are, first time businesses or graduates, or is there a typical sort of profile of a person that goes?
It's definitely people that are building their network, people that have a little time, heads down in a project. You're probably not spending a lot of time, going.
Sorry, Derek, I lost you for a minute there. I think you said people that are building their network, right?
Yeah, people that want to build their network, people that are, sort of at an open stage of their career where they're trying to figure out either what's next or they're trying to, in a sort of building phase. Or it could be like somebody that just sees a speaker and says like they are an expert in something that I want to be an expert in and I really want to learn from that person. So it could just be people that are, really interested in the content that's being featured on the stage as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about networking. I mean, like I said before, these sorts of events are great for entrepreneurs to network. They're great for people in general to network as well. Do you have any specific tips? Do you have a 101 in terms of networking and making new friends, making new connections, especially at an event like Startup Grind?
I would just, if you go to Startup Grind, just don't pitch people's brains out with your idea. Like, just relax and look to the person to your right, your left, and think, how can I help this person? And if you genuinely do that, I promise you, you will get a lot out of it. Especially if you do that over a long period of time, it will absolutely come back around. And so that's what I do. When I talk to people, I just say, hey, how can I help you? And I just say that directly. And we sort of get to the point, and sometimes I can and sometimes I can't, but people are sort of refreshed by the fact that you're not just trying to take all the time. And you know, you might be surprised how much you actually can help somebody if you, you know, if you ask and genuinely try.
Yeah, I got asked a question about, well, somebody asked me, for an introvert, you know, introverts who may be perhaps on the shy side, not all the time, but usually on the shy side, do you have any sort of advice for, you know, if you're going to a startup grind event, any advice for an introvert who's perhaps trying to, you know, they see somebody in the corner there or somebody sitting next to them, an opening line or anything like that?
I don't know. I'm maybe not the best person to advise introverts on how to be less introverted, but you know, if you're worried about talking to somebody, at the very least, like, go talk to the person that's running the event. You know, that person should be friendly and open, and whether it's Startup Grind or not. So, you know, just look for people that are smiling. I mean, look for people that seem welcoming, and go talk to them. That's usually who I'd go to talk to anyways. But just find people that seem like they'd be willing to, you know, to sort of work with you on a conversation, and then point you and say, hey, is there anybody else here you think I should meet that you could introduce me to? It's really easy for people to, you know, introduce you to somebody else. It's like, oh yeah, I just met this person. They're interesting. And maybe that can keep, you know, kind of, you can leapfrog to the next lily pad, the next lily pad, next lily pad. By just, you know, asking people, or if people sort of walk up, like, you know, invite them into the conversation, and try to just get more people involved. And then maybe you don't have to, you know, it's, you're not doing that much work, but you're just sort of being aware and you know, hustling a little bit.
I like that. I like that. And I think when people think of networking, they probably are intimidated because they don't know how to open things up, maybe. So that was about asking simple questions, isn't it? And just having a general, natural, normal conversation, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And another question that I get asked quite a lot, and whether that be from people who are entrepreneurs or would be entrepreneurs, or people who are looking to, you know, understand which direction to take their next, you know, to look for their next opportunity, is about picking a niche, or a niche, as they say in England, picking a niche. How do you go about picking an idea, or picking, your next route, your next direction?
Well, I think Paul Graham, who started Y Combinator, sort of describes this the best, and you can go read some of his essays, or people that watch this should go read some of his early essays. I think they're really good at this, but the best way to do it is to really approach it from the problem. You know, what problem are you trying to solve? And how are you uniquely positioned to solve that problem? And whether that's domain expertise or background, or, you know, something like, you know, I met a guy actually in Sacramento who's doing a construction software company. And I said, you know, what's your background? I said, well, my dad runs, you know, one of the 20 biggest construction companies in the country. It's like, wow, you probably know a lot about construction if that's the case, right? And you probably got a big network through your, you know, family, you've got a good big network in the construction industry. So how are you uniquely positioned to solve a problem? And I would just, you know, and then I would say, like, well, people pay for it. How much will they pay for it? And you don't know unless you ask, and then you ask them to give you a check. And so, you know, that's where I would really start with the problem. A lot of times that's when people start talking to me about ideas, it's always what problem are you trying to solve? And I think if you can really distill it down to that, you know, you might, versus like, hey, I have this really cool idea. It's like, well, you know, ideas, everybody's got ideas, but does it actually solve a real problem? Will people actually pay real money for it? And are you uniquely positioned to actually solve that problem, either from a technology standpoint or otherwise. And if you have good answers to those things, then you might want to invest a lot of time and money and energy into building it.
Sounds good to me. Sounds great. And obviously a lot of people on here today aspiring to, well, this is the remote work life summit. I've spoken to other people on this summit, and as I said to you before, I think the main reason I wanted to speak to Derek today is because the values really sort of, I hold those values dear to me, and values are what often the reason that most CEOs in any case will start a business. But Derek, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, I know that Startup Grind is that obviously it's a remote company, it's a remote business. Was that a deliberate strategy for you, or was it through circumstance?
It originally was not deliberate. It was just totally out of necessity in the beginning, because my co-founder is a guy named Joel Fernandez, and he lived in Portugal. And when he was very young, he was unable to go to school, and he had to help take care of his family. And so he never went to college. He was a self-taught engineer, and he's an amazing engineer. He's, you know, the best engineer on our team. And we tried to get him to the United States, but we couldn't. And so we were just sort of working, you know, remotely, he and I. And then from there, you know, we sort of made it work. He would come here once in a while, and, you know, we'd hang out for a week or two, or, you know, we would get on Skype a lot. And eventually, after years of doing that, it worked. I mean, we figured out how to work really well together like that. And then we started adding other people to the team to do the same thing. And, you know, it worked because it worked for us. We figured out how to make it work with others. So, you know, in the beginning, no, it wasn't, you know, it's this big global trend, and I'm very happy to be part of this discussion with you and your audience and community. But really, like, for us, it was just out of necessity, total accident, and sort of a big blessing in disguise.
And, I mean, you mentioned it's a global trend. Do you have any predictions? I know it's difficult to make predictions, but do you anticipate the growth of remote work and your own remote team?
Well, here's something to keep a look on in terms of, like, tracking a global trend. So every year Forbes does this list of the top 100 cloud companies. And this year, or this last list that they released not too long ago, there was two who self-identified as being distributed teams. I would bullishly say that number is going to go up dramatically over the next 5 years. And for all the reasons that people probably know, and I'm preaching to the choir here, but, you know, access to talent. I live in Silicon Valley. I've lived here for 13 years. It is unbelievably expensive to live here. It is ridiculous. It is not, it's beautiful in some places, and other places it's terrible and awful. In terms of for a place to live, some good schools, some terrible schools. But the cost of living is just astronomical. And for us, like, we want the best, we want great people, we want A players. And unless we, you know, are Google or Facebook, we just cannot hire those people here because we can't afford to pay them. And we can't afford to move them here. And frankly, like, you know, people don't want to live here. There's better places to live. I'm not from here. I've lived 6 years. I grew up in Florida. I lived 6 years in Europe as a kid. I lived in New Zealand for 2 years. So there's lots of amazing places to live that are not Silicon Valley. But having your company sort of headquartered here, having a hub here, is super valuable and super important. And so, but we just want great people, and we want to scale a company with great people, but, you know, we can't compete with Google and Facebook. So you know, getting great people around the world. We have people all over the world that work for us, all across the United States, all across, you know, Western Europe, Africa. We have people in Asia that work for us. So, you know, there are amazing people literally everywhere. And it's just a matter of finding them, you know, making sure they match your culture and your values, and then bringing them in. And, you know, figuring out time zones, figuring out meetings, using Zoom or Hangout. You know, you can really build a team and make it work today, where it was much, even 5 years ago, it was much more difficult than it is today. So I think that's only getting easier.
And how, when you're actually going out into the market and selecting and doing your scoping for new talent, like you said, you've got a global talent pool to source from. What does your recruitment process look like from the actual top, where you're scoping out and sourcing people?
You know, I think when we look at people, you know, we always say, like, culture over talent, first of all, which is not a sort of unique thing. But in the beginning, when you're first starting a company, it's very easy to, like, take anybody, because nobody, like, believes in what you're doing. So if you have, you know, if you have 10 fingers and can type, and, you know, you have a functioning brain and a beating heart, you're probably right for my startup.
A warm body.
A warm body. But, you know, once you get past that initial phase, it's really, you know, just vital that you get great, great people. And like I mentioned this earlier, like, I have so many examples where great people have fundamentally changed what we do. And I have great examples where horrible people almost completely destroyed what we had built.
Oh my gosh.
And so, you know, you just want to be militant about who you let in. And I don't know, location to me is not a factor in that. You know, you need look for remote people. You need people that are self-starters, people that can, you know, people that can work without having to be checked on. I mean, we don't track what people are doing on a day-to-day basis or hour-by-hour basis. We definitely check day-to-day, but, you know, you just have to, you know, if you're susceptible to watching Netflix, if you're home alone, like, you're not going to be a good remote worker. And so, you know, it's a certain kind of person, and they have to match our culture and have to be that certain kind of person and sort of self-starter person. But I don't know, my experiences shows that those people are in every culture and in every country. So, we have three great designers from Latin America, and they're all women, and they're all incredible, and they have this unique style. And I don't know what we'd do without them. You know, the oldest ones that have been around in terms of the company, longest with us, like, fundamentally changed the way people perceive our brand. And this is somebody that was not involved until the last few years and doesn't live in this country. And, you know, I've met a few times in my life, but, you know, but they just have totally changed what we've done. I don't know what we'd do without them. So thankfully we were able to work remotely with them.
And I mean, you said it takes a certain kind of person. You mentioned the Netflix thing there that made me laugh. I mean, for me, but I obviously, like you said, you've got a self-starter, you've got somebody who, you have to have, a certain amount of resilience, don't you? Because you don't have, well, I suppose in any facet you need resilience, but more so I would have said as a remote worker. Are there any other sort of, I suppose, traits that you have in your team in terms of somebody who's naturally inclined to work remotely?
You know, it's interesting. We have a lot of people that have kids. We have a lot of people that have families. I find that if I had a team that was all based here in the same office with me, I don't think I could coach my kids' basketball teams or you know, soccer teams or whatever. It would just, because, like, you need to be in the office, you know, you need to have a physical presence, but you know, for me, again, like putting the big balls in first, I think we're able to help people. Like, look, if you need to go do, you know, volunteer at your kid's school, or hey, if you need to go do something, like you can go do that in the middle of the day and then just make the work up later. And nobody's, you know, we just trust that you're, you know, that you're going to do your job. And you can't, you know, if you're driving to an office, you can't just like leave at 3 o'clock, 2 times a week. Like, but if you're at home and you're driving down the street, yeah, you can do that. You can come back and finish your work. So I think, you know, we sort of over-index on people with kids, honestly, which is kind of interesting. I think, yeah, I mean, just, I don't know, just people who can run their own up, like we in their own businesses.
I lost you there, Derek, sorry.
I said we have a lot of ex-entrepreneurs, people that have run their own businesses. Again, because you have to sort of, nobody's pushing you to run your own business, you have to do it yourself. So I think those people are pretty natural fits with remote work as well. People that don't cause problems, just people who just, I'm not saying like, not people who don't challenge you or try to make you better. We definitely, you know, we have feedback and surveys and, you know, care what our team thinks and how we can make their lives better. But just people who generally are going to be easy to work with. And you can see that all along the way. Are they, how are their emails? Are they, do they communicate well in the email? When you meet with them, like sometimes I will change in like a time for an interview right before I'm going to have it just to see how somebody reacts to it.
Really?
And yeah. And I'll just say like, hey, I need to move this by 3 hours. And if they're like, if they kind of are very difficult about it or sort of like ego, you know, show some ego about it, like, hey, well, I'm really busy too. Or yeah, like I you know, but it, and then a lot of people are like, hey, and then when I get on the call, I'll say, I'm so sorry for moving that. And you know, I kind of judge their reaction and say, oh, well, you know, yeah, it was, you know, it was kind of a pain, but you know, I worked it out. I mean, you know, you kind of see how do they react to, you know, to sort of challenges that are thrown at them. And are they going to be easy to work with? Hard to tell, but different things you can do to sort of test that along the way.
No, that's, I never would have thought of that. It's a handy one for like I said, everybody out there listening. And in terms of just actually taking a step back a little bit, because some people I've spoken to, they when they're actually doing the application process, they accept resumes. Other people don't. Other people will look at people's social profiles or their portfolio. How do you, do you accept resumes? Is it typical for you to accept resumes, or you have different ways of doing it?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, people can just apply on the website, you know, and yeah, we go through them, and we're, you know, we have multiple people that go through resumes that come in, and we take referrals very seriously. And so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't know some people come through our network, but a lot of most people that join the team, you know, nobody knows. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you, question slipped my mind now, in terms of, the actual interview process, yeah, the interview process itself. Again, is there a typical process that you follow? You mentioned one of those little things, that those little tricks that you throw in there. Do you assess people in other ways at all?
I mean, we have a pretty robust interview process. And for instance, if you're going to join the engineering team, you have to go through about a 5-hour interview, 5 hours of interviews with different people. And for a startup, it seems in some ways like, well, is that overkill? Like, really, why are you doing so much? But what we found is people really appreciate it. The people that are like us appreciate it. Like, wow, this is the most thorough startup interview process I've ever been through. And we have a rating system. And if, you know, if it's like, it's important that everybody agrees to us. And if some people don't agree, then or if one, even if somebody's like, I think this person's great, we got to hire him. If somebody else is like, you know, below a certain threshold, we don't hire them. So it's, you know, it's this idea that, you know, some people that you get in the organization, they come in and they multiply and they just have this huge impact. And getting bad people in can have a way worse than the upside. It's like the negative can absolutely destroy the whole company. I've talked to somebody who hired hundreds of people at Google one time, and they said that when they were hiring at Google, they always said that there's no problem that is so great that it's worth hiring the wrong person for. And that's really hard to take an honest look at sometimes when you don't have a lot and don't have a lot of resumes coming in and don't have a lot of options and don't have a lot of money to pay and all of these things. But you've just got to, it's better to wait another month. It's better to, you know, struggle yourself for another couple of weeks and keep looking for the right person than to hire the wrong person just to solve the problem right now.
Absolutely. And I mean, your team, you mentioned 20 in your team with, or around about 20 in your team with Startup Grind and about 20 in your team with Bevy as well. Startup Grind first, is there a typical sort of, I suppose, lots of people usually hire for their product team, for example. How's your team split up?
About half the team is engineering, and then probably a quarter of the team is in success, and then a quarter of the team, or what we call Bevy Care, and then sort of take care of the existing customers, and then a quarter of the team is in sales and marketing.
And actually, yeah, tell us a little bit about Bevy as well, because we haven't really talked very much about Bevy, and that's something worth talking about.
A couple of years ago, we started to have all these problems scaling Startup Grind. We were in about 150 cities, and we just were sort of getting all of this feedback of some very angry local chapter directors saying, like, hey, like, this isn't working for us anymore. So I looked at all the products that were available in the market and came to find out it was going to cost us about $150,000 a year in software that was going to solve about 60% of our problem, because we were like such a high usage type of brand or company. And so me and my co-founders decided, well, you know, if we just invest ourselves in building a solution over the next 2 years, we'll probably spend the same amount of money as we would over the next 5 years with somebody else, but at least we can run it ourselves and we can run it for the next 10 or 15 years. So we set out to build our own solution in 2015. We launched it. It took us a year. We launched it in 2016, and it worked. And our growth started to take off again. And then we started to show it to other companies, and they said, hey, can we use that? And they said, maybe. I don't know. Let's try to figure it out. And so then we started, you know, some of our first customers were some very big companies. And what we learned is that that there's this huge trend towards, this digital pendulum is absolutely swinging back. And the future does not belong to machine learning and AI. The future belongs to community. If you think about, marketing, you know, in the past, people got on the phones and then, people visited your office, tried to sell to you. And then, it was digitally, they're trying to sell to you with ads. I saw this study from Europe a couple weeks ago that said that 30% of millennials do not trust what they read online. Mm-hmm. So who do people trust? What do they trust? Can I trust an Amazon review? I don't know. Can I trust a Yelp review? Probably not. Who can I trust? So I can trust other customers. I can trust people who have experienced the product, who've used the product. And that's what Startup Grind is where you have people getting together in real life and building community in real life and talking to each other and educating each other. And there are companies all over the world doing this. We call it customer-to-customer marketing. It's a new category, it's something that all the best companies in the world are already doing. It's building real communities with real people, solving, real people's problems, and all the top tech companies do it. And what we just see it as this huge trend that many of the best companies in the world do today, but that in the future everyone will do it. And so we help people scale their communities in real life. And we do that for school alumni. We do that for tech companies. We do that for consumer companies. Anybody that wants to get face to face with their customers and build deeper customer relationships.
And you think, because of the amount of hype that's surrounding AI at the moment, that's the future. But it's to me, I think along the same lines as some of those servers that you talked about, is that you can trust people. You can trust, you have to put your trust in people above technology or above what you read online. And is that how is that the direction that you're going? And you're going more away from the artificial side of things and more towards continuing to scale the whole idea of the customer marketing piece that you talked about?
Yeah, I mean, before it's, events are expensive.
I lost you again. Sorry. Lost you a minute there.
Monotonous, deep. Events are expensive. They're difficult to run. There's a lot of cumbersome little details involved in them. And what we try to do is take all of that pain out and make it really, really easy to run these events and programs. And then if it's easy to run them, then you can then scale them. And so we have some companies that do, like Startup Grind, hundreds of events a month with us with a very small team, because they're working with their customers who are sort of advocating for their brand. You think about hey, who would I rather hear from? Like, if I should buy this product or this software or not, would I rather hear from the salesperson? Would I rather hear from somebody from the company? No, of course not. I'd rather hear from a customer and hear their experience. Somebody that's just believes in it, just genuinely likes it and uses it. So we have one customer who literally went from zero to hosting 1,000 events a month with us. And, with a very small team, but they've now scaled. They have this huge digital community there. Now they have this huge real life community that is, basically powered by Bevy.
And yeah, you're building your business on community. And again, that's another thing that I really love about Startup Grind, about Bevy. It seems that it's your business embodies your own sort of ethics in many ways. And I think those ethics obviously chime with a lot of the people, and I think that's what's building your success. In terms of the future then, what do you see? I mean, as we've talked about those aspects of community, but what's the future for you, Derek, and for Startup Grind? What's the next few years look like?
Busy. We're trying to build Bevy into a big, scalable, technology company. And, we hope that a lot more people will join our sort of movement and, use our product. And we're working very hard on that. And with Startup Grind, our goal is to educate every entrepreneur in the world. And so we've got a long ways to go to doing that, although we've made some progress. So I think we can, be in thousands of cities eventually. And today we're in 500. We've just got a long ways to go in helping people. And, there's always new people coming in, because there's, always new people with ideas and trying to figure things out. So we're just trying to serve entrepreneurs as best we can. And we sort of put one foot in front of the other and listen to them and try to take their feedback and hopefully deliver something that, that meets their expectations. Delights them. And so I don't really know, can predict the future, right? No, you have to just go out and make the future. I hope we have more success, and, I hope the world economy keeps doing well. And I hope, there's lots of other things that are out of my control that I don't worry too much about, but we'll just keep working and plugging along. And, one thing is I always say our competitors will never outwork us. They can't, because we work too hard. And, you know, but at the same time, like, we want to live life. So it's, you know, sort of figuring out how do you live life and grow as a person. And then also how do you develop and build these products and companies at the same time. And so hopefully we'll keep that in line and do more of the same.
And my last two questions, because I know you got to rush off, to wrap two questions in one. So the first question, what times of year do you typically hire? And the second question, the second part of that question is, in terms of if somebody's considering applying for a remote role, what's your biggest piece of advice?
For us in hiring, you know, our for Startup Grind, our global conference is in February, so usually we have a lot of hiring leading up to that and sort of getting ready for that, because that's sort of like our big moment. That's like our World Cup each year. And then usually gets kind of quiet in the summer. So usually in the fall is you know, sort of when we're hiring most for that. In terms of one piece of advice for working remotely, I would just say deliver results that make people feel like you're, not that you work remotely, but that you work everywhere. You know, ideally people are in the same room working together. There's just, from a communication standpoint, that is still the best way to get anything done, is to be in the same room. So you've got to really deliver to make people feel like you actually get more not being in the same room. Like you're doing so well, you're delivering so well that, you know, it wouldn't matter where, if you were in the same room or there was some other situation, like you couldn't be doing and delivering more than you are. So just say, like, work really hard and make people feel like if you leave, it's going to be a massive, massive problem. And, you know, creates leverage for yourself and, you know, and also helps build whatever you're trying to build. So be indispensable, be irreplaceable. Not because you put a process in place that nobody else understands, but because the work you do just delivers so well that, you know, that no one could ever imagine you leaving. And people will sort of hopefully they'll take care of you regardless, but then they're sort of forced to take care of you. And that's a good position to be in as a remote worker.
Derek, thank you. What can I say?
It's been thank great. You. Thank you very much. You're very gracious. I've really enjoyed this, Alex. Thanks for bringing people together and for letting me be part of, you know, your remote work community. It's really cool.
It's been an honor for me as well. And obviously I'm going to be spreading the word far and wide. And if there's anything that I can do to help you, because you've given me your time, like I said, I mean, I wasn't just saying it, but I love what you're doing. I love those. Yeah. The values are just so dear to my heart. I'm very much, you know, love connecting with friends who share the same values. So if there's anything I can do to help you, please let me know.
Thanks so much. And same for me and same with the audience. My email is derek@startgrind.com. D-E-R-E-K is my first name. So if there's something I can be helpful with for the audience, that's my only email. So feel free to email me and let me know what I can do to be useful.
Wonderful.
Okay. Thanks so much, Alex.
All the best for the future, Derek.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.